Inflation. What does it mean? Where are we going? Are they going to fix this thing? Are they about to turn it around? We'll talk about that. And we're going to lose a major war. All that's coming up on I'm Right. Inflation. The economy. Let's pause, actually, before we get into Joe Biden and what the administration's doing and where we're going. We're going to go over all that tonight. We have a great show for you on I'm Right. Let's talk about the economy. Because I saw this word tossed around a lot right when coronavirus hit. I saw people, not just on the left, by the way, people on the right, talking about the economy, almost putting it down or acting like it was just a side issue. Remember that? I'm sure you remember this. If it saves one life, we have to shut things down. Or the human lives are more important than money. You heard all these kind of stupid things people were saying. Honestly, and I'll explain why in a second, it sounded to me like a society of children. That's what it sounded like. Oh, that's ridiculous. Your stocks, the lives are more important than your stocks. I know you heard all this stuff. Let's talk about that for a moment because we're about to talk about where the economy's going. What's the economy? Is a human life worth more than the economy? Let's figure this out. I want you to pause for a moment as you're watching the show tonight, and thank you again for watching the show. I want you to think about just where you live, whether it be out in the country, suburbia, the city. I want you to think about where you live, and I want you to take just a brief 30-second accounting of everything around you in a 20-mile radius. Do you have roads? Do you have a hospital? Maybe several? Do you have schools? Think about your own home. I want you to take an honest accounting of everything that's around you in your home. Right now, are you sitting in the snow or rain? Or heat? Or are you sitting at somewhere close to about 72, 73 degrees? If it's too hot, what are you going to do? If it's too cold, what are you going to do? You're going to walk over and adjust that. If somebody, God forbid, I hope this doesn't happen, if somebody in your home starts choking on a peanut butter sandwich right as they hear the sound of my voice, are you going to be able to pick up your $1,000 cell phone and dial 911 and have a paramedic at your door like that? I want you to think about all the food. I want you to think about the fact that you, an American citizen, don't even think about this, and I don't either, but the truth is we should think about it every day. I want you to think about the fact that you, an American citizen, as you watch me right now, you're probably no greater than 20, 30 feet away from unlimited supplies of clean drinking water. Unlimited. This is a cup here. I think I'm 17 feet away from the faucet we have here at the studio. Unlimited. I could chug this right now on the air and go get 20 more. And you're kind of rolling your eyes right now saying, Jesse, who cares? That's so stupid. Yeah, you don't have any idea how many people will die today because they don't have access to one glass of drinking water. You walk to the faucet and get endless supplies of it. And we're not even talking about the big stuff, right? We're not even talking about aircraft carriers and space shuttles and missiles and all these things. You see, I understand this is not fashionable, it won't be popular, and it certainly doesn't touch people's feels. The economy is worth way more than one person's life. In fact, the economy is priceless. It's what I was shouting last year from the rooftops. It's worth one life if it saves one life. No, it's not worth that at all. Your life, my life, the life of everyone you know, the life of everyone I know, is not at all worth more than the economy of the United States, because a society's economy is the thing that keeps the economy running. We're not talking about how your stocks are doing. We're talking about everything around you. It is your economy that brought that. You don't stop that ever. Never. For any reason. I don't care if you woke up tomorrow morning and you found out China had nuked our top 10 most populous cities. You don't wake up that morning and say, well, everyone just, nobody go to work. Everyone stop for just a couple weeks. Just everyone go home a couple weeks. The show must go on. Otherwise, the entire nation crumbles into nothing. So as we start talking about inflation here and Joe Biden and where we're going, and I understand these are going to be hard things to hear, but as we talk about all this, I want you to understand something. Every single thing we're about to see right now, all the pain that's already here, all the pain that's coming, every single bit of it came from this concept that the economy is just some side issue. It's just for stockbrokers on Wall Street. If it saves one life, that's what really matters. That is about to cost many, many, many lives. Now let's talk about what the President of the United States, Joe Biden, said just back in July. Here it is.
The vast majority of the experts, including Wall Street, are suggesting that it's highly unlikely that it's going to be long-term inflation that's going to get out of hand.
Just one brief pause before we go into what he said. Democrats, communists, I should say, do this all the time. I think I'm going to start doing this myself, just so they can enjoy the fruits of what they've brought to the table. They have this lie they tell. Barack Obama was masterful at this, and Joe Biden has continued it. Every Democrat does it now, where they'll tell an outright lie, and they'll always back it up with, well, basically all the experts, pretty much every economist, almost every scientist, basically everyone in the medical community, that they just always announce that, well, it's pretty much everybody. And because we don't have a media in this country, the follow-up is never, could you name for me the specific people you're talking about? Well, everyone says, everyone's saying, whenever you hear a Democrat say the words, every economist at Wall Street, you know they're lying. Of course, it's insane to think we wouldn't have long-term inflation. Why wouldn't we have long-term inflation? We looked at the economy, we said pause, and then people were obviously hurting because people have to work to make a living. So the federal government gathered up massive piles of cash, trillions of cash, and just started chucking it at the economy. What did you think was going to happen? Of course, we're devaluing the dollar with every dollar they print, and they printed trillions of dollars. Of course, look, I'm an idiot, and I was warning everybody about inflation back then. We have former Treasury Secretary under Clinton, actually, Larry Summers. I mean, he was right, and he's still right.
How long do you think inflation is going to go up?
I think the odds are that we're going to have inflation of a kind we haven't seen in 30 years until either the Fed takes some significant move with respect to monetary policy or until there's some kind of accident.
Okay, haven't seen in 30 years. And let's keep in mind, I know you already know this, but let's keep in mind what inflation actually is. It's a pay cut for you and me. That's what it is. When the cost of everything around you goes up, when the value of your dollar goes down, it's no different than you walking in your boss's office today and him sitting you down and saying, hey, Bob, bad news, 6% pay cut for you. 10% pay cut for you, because remember, we're already at 6. 10 is right around the corner. You ready for a 10% pay cut? What changes in your life with a 10% pay cut? You still going to be able to fill up your car? Still going to be able to get everything you need? You're going to be able to pay your bills? You're going to be going through the bills, canceling things? You're going to be canceling that visit to go see Mom? What changes in your life as the value of your dollar goes down and down and down and down some more? The truth is, we're already seeing Americans across the board, well, except for the filthy rich ones, but Americans across the board seeing a decreased standard of living. It's going down and it's going down and it's going down. And keep in mind, there right now is no plan. There has been no plan presented to stop the bleeding. None. None. They don't have any idea what they're doing. In fact, they seem pretty cold to the fact you're already seeing a decrease in standard of living.
The dirty little secret here, Willie, while nobody likes to pay more, On average, we have the money to do so. Household savings hit a record high over the pandemic. We didn't really have anywhere to go out and spend. And as we said a moment ago, we're expecting retail sales this holiday season to break records. For those who own their homes, the value of our homes are up. And while the stock market isn't the economy, you got over half of American households with some investment in the markets, and the markets have hit record highs. So we need to put all of this in perspective.
Stop complaining about inflation, peasant. You have the money. Don't you have all the money in the world? Why are you worried about eggs going up 12%? Why are you worried about the cost of beef, chicken, everything else skyrocketing? Why are you worried about the cost of gas? You have all the money in the world, right? And look, these people are so disconnected from reality, and that's really the problem we face in this country right now, is the people who make the decisions on behalf of you, on behalf of me, they don't have any connection to us. They don't understand how working people live. I know, because not to bring up old stuff, I watched this last year too when coronavirus hit, and even people I know, friends of mine, were saying things like, just go home for 2 weeks, what's wrong with you? And my jaw just fell open. Clearly people have spent too much time in college and in the media world. People can't just go home for 2 weeks. People have bills to pay. For most of my life, if I just went home for 2 weeks, just call it quits, just a couple weeks, I'm not eating, or the car payment isn't getting made, or it's a big deal. But these people aren't connected to reality. Listen to the White House Chief of Staff, Ron Klain.
I think things are a lot better in this country than they were a year ago with regard to COVID, with regard to the economy. But we have a lot of work left to do. And I think voters are in a show me, don't tell me mode. I don't think they really care as much about what I'm saying on TV or what you're saying on TV as much as they do about us putting results into their lives.
Yeah, well, show me. It's going to be fine. Look, people aren't even that worried about it, honestly. Or, I love this new spin, you've already seen some of this and you're going to see a lot of it, so just prepare yourself for it. I love this one from Bloomberg. Why don't you just buy less? Why don't you just buy less and learn to live how more like Europeans live? Oh, believe me, you can roll your eyes and get mad about that all you want. You're going to see that lecture from the system and their propagandists a lot now. You see, there's not going to be any covering up the fact your standard of living is about to go down, that you can afford less, that you are effectively poor. You can't cover that up. When you can't buy chicken this week, you can't cover that up. So what they're going to do is they're simply going to shift into the mode where they'll try to make you ashamed of even wanting. Why do you want so much chicken? Do you really need that many eggs? You'd never see Europeans eat that many eggs. You dirty, selfish American. Oh, it's coming. Don't think they're above talking down to you because you want to maintain the standard of living that you've grown accustomed to. And there's one other thing. The way they talk down to white people right now in this country is really, really gross. Now, full disclosure, before I go into this, I don't do a bunch of skin color politics. Now, you know, I'm more than happy to talk about all that stuff. In fact, I talk about it in very uncomfortable ways, but I just don't. I understand I'm a minority in this. I just don't place any value on skin pigmentation. I really genuinely do not. It doesn't matter to me. And another reason I don't wade into it is every skin color activist I've ever known, black, white, and everything else, they all, even friends of mine, routinely look like idiots. Because when you place value on the color of your skin, you'll inevitably end up defending the indefensible because you've placed value on something that in and of itself doesn't have value. Culture has value. Parents have value. This doesn't have any value in it. So you look like an idiot. So I don't do white activism. I don't do black activism. I just don't do skin color activism. I think it all comes across really bad. But are we really going to do the thing where the economy takes a downturn and the corporate press blames white people? Apparently we are.
Well, how can the industry be more welcoming? Because I have to tell you, I talked to a lot of truck drivers in preparing for this segment, and most of these truck drivers were people of color, and they talked about, you know, hearing some of the racism over the CB. You know, this is, again, an industry populated by a lot of white men over the age of 55. This group of people overwhelmingly voted for Trump. Some people have talked about, you know, aggressive truck drivers cutting them off or not being helpful.
The way these people talk, I'll tell you. And again, I don't do the skin color activism, I just don't care for it. But I do hear the communists whining, like after that election in Virginia, about white people this, and this is a white lash, it's white people backlash. And I have to tell you, privately, I go, well, yeah. Do you think you can consistently speak about a group of people that way without them taking it out on you? White people are not a punching bag in this country and certainly shouldn't be. It's really gross. Oh, but you didn't think it was just going to be white people's fault, right? You see, the Biden administration, they've really dug into this inflation thing. And you know what they've found out? You're not going to believe the real culprit for inflation.
Is inflation going to get worse before it gets better? Is there anything President Biden can do in the short term?
We're focused on how to address this in the short term and the medium term, George. In the short term, number one, we have to finish the job on COVID. We know that the more that people feel comfortable getting out into the economy, going to movies rather than buying a television at home, working in the workplace, the more we can return a sense of normalcy to our economy. Getting those shots out for 5 to 11-year-olds is going to provide a lot of comfort to American families. We're making a lot of progress on that front.
Just trying to make sure I have this right. The plan to tackle inflation involves vaccinating kids? When I tell you things are about to get worse, I'm telling you things are about to get worse. The people in charge aren't even interested in tackling the problem. They don't even think there's a problem. And all that may have made you uncomfortable, but I'm right. We have the great Dave Marcus joining us next. He's got a lot to talk about. But speaking of all this financial stuff, are you in debt? Are you buried in debt? $10 or more, maybe. Make a phone call for me. Set aside the embarrassment and the shame, and definitely set aside this, that, well, I'll never get out of it. That's a garbage lie. Call Total Financial Freedom. Make one phone call for me. They've been doing it for 15 years. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau for a reason. There's no story you're going to give them they haven't heard before. But Jesse, you don't understand. I owe $100,000. They've heard it all. In some cases, they're cutting payments in half. One phone call, all right? 877-332-8291. 877-332-8291. Make sure you tell them Jesse Kelly told you to call. You're going to get an extra something free, all right? We'll be back.
Can you give us the construct of how you will deconstruct the racism that was built into the roadways?
I'm still surprised that some people were surprised when I pointed to the fact that if a highway was built for the purpose of dividing a white and a black neighborhood, or if an underpass was constructed such that a bus carrying mostly black and Puerto Rican kids to a beach, or that would have been, in New York, was designed too low for it to pass by, that obviously reflects racism that went into those design choices. I don't think we have anything to lose by confronting that simple reality, and I think we have everything to gain by acknowledging it and then dealing with it.
We just have the biggest bunch of clowns running this country. Joining me now is Dave Marcus. He's a columnist with the New York Post and Fox News, also author of the book Charade. And Dave, it seems like we have children running the country. I mean, I would expect that from some idiot college freshman majoring in sociology or something like that somewhere, but these people run the country.
To me, the worst part is the smugness, is just that he's surprised when people are surprised, right? Because he saw a Ken Burns documentary once, and he's also wrong, right? What he's talking about with the bridges is Jones Beach. I went and looked it up. Jones Beach, you know, was built in 1930 when New York City was 95% white. Robert Moses, who built it, was probably trying to keep people out. He's trying to keep poor people out. So what happens? Immediately, the Washington Post fact checker jumps in to get Buttigieg's back and say, yes, look, it's in this book. You know, this is true. 24 hours later, he has to amend that and say, actually, the experts don't think this was true. So, yeah, I mean, it's a joke, and we're just supposed to accept it because to question it, you know, makes us racist or something. And it was just awful. It was just stupid.
It was stupid, and I'm glad you used the word joke, because I have these moments where I sit back and I just marvel at the fact that how corrupt and rotted it all is. Like, you just brought up the Washington Post. That's the second biggest newspaper in the United States of America, and some politician says something that's, one, weird, two, not even factually correct, and the second biggest paper in the country jumps in immediately to defend him, and all of it is a complete fabrication. It just, I understand you're always going to be in the know on the issues, Dave. I get that. But what chance does the average American have to have any idea what is real and what's false when we're at this level of lies?
Look, I think the only chance that they have is to understand that most of the places where they're getting their information have some kind of a bias, and at no point should they just accept anything, you know, at face value, especially if it's coming from someplace from the Washington Post. CNN's fact checker did exactly the same thing. I mean, they're comms people. They're not journalists, and I think that viewers just need to understand that.
Dave, you have an article right now in Fox News saying Donald Trump broke the woke stranglehold on our country and on us. What are you talking about? What do you mean?
So if you think back to the very early days of Trump's 2016 run, one of the big things that he ran on was fighting against political correctness. He would say, you know, political correctness is killing us. He said, we don't have time for it. That got a little bit lost throughout his presidency. But while he was saying that, we still had Republican leaders who, anytime they were even remotely accused of racism, would just sort of like collapse into the fetal position and shut up, right? Because to even defend yourself was almost admitting to it or something. And Trump wouldn't play that game. So fast forward to the recent election in Virginia. Parents in the state were very upset about critical race theory. Glenn Youngkin quite wisely picked up on that and carried that flag. What did Terry McAuliffe do? He did what Democrats have done for 20 years. He called Youngkin a racist. He said, this is dog whistles. You're a racist. But it didn't work, right? Suddenly it didn't work. And I really do believe that the reason it doesn't work anymore is because Donald Trump took so many bullets on this, took so much flack on this, that he really sucked the air out of the balloon. And it's just, it's an aspect of the Democrat Party playbook that I don't think is ever going to work for them quite the same way again.
Okay, then I know I'm asking you to predict the future here, but Democrats are a lot of things. Bad at politics is not one of them. Where do they go from here? If I understand, look, in some idiot like Maxine Waters, her district, that card's always going to work. I get it. Now, she's always going to be anti-Maxine. But for most of the country, when they hear racism and now everyone rolls their eyes instinctively, that means it's become a political loser. What comes next? Because they've been living on this for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, look, they have a problem. I mean, I think what McAuliffe could have done and probably should have done is acknowledge at least some of the excesses of wokeness, right? Acknowledge that, like, yeah, we don't want to separate kindergarten students by race and tell some of them they're oppressors and some of them that they're oppressed. Instead, he just pretended like the whole thing was a non-issue, that anybody who claims that it is an issue is a racist. You have Breonna Keeler on CNN just, like, you know, repeating over and over again an interview with Rick Scott, it's not in the curriculum. He's quoting her from the Department of Education. And they just can't shake this, and I think they need to. I think they need to find a more nuanced argument in regard to these things. But are they capable of it? I'm not sure. Will AOC let them? I'm not sure.
Well, you say Donald Trump broke that. Do you think the GOP is bolder now than they were before? Because Lord knows they need to be.
I do think so. I think that some of the courage that at least many of them sort of screwed up after everything that happened with January 6th, where you had this immediate reaction of sort of like, this is really bad. And then as the facts sort of came in, more and more House Republicans became resistant to the idea of this bipartisan commission. They really put Pelosi in a box where she had to create her own commission, which is deeply unpopular, her own committee, which is deeply unpopular with the American people. So I do think you are starting to see a Republican Party that understands it's able to fight. I also think you have a slate of primary candidates, you know, guys like Joe Kent, you know, guys all over the country who are clearly fighters in a way that the old school of you know, the Eric Cantors of the world just weren't.
I saw this in the Daily Beast, and I have to ask you about it before I let you go. Chris Christie, Liz Cheney, they think that's the ticket that could they could bring Trump down. Is that the ticket that's going to bring Trump down?
No, that's absolutely insane. I will say this, though, and you and I may well disagree on this a bit. I put them in somewhat different boxes. I still think, at least at this point, depending on how much farther off the farm he wants to go, there still is a place in the GOP and the conservative movement for Christie. He's a Northeast Republican, right? Northeast Republicans are different. 6 of the 13 House members who voted for the infrastructure package were from New York or New Jersey. I think that can still be in the tent. Cheney can't be. Cheney's a Democrat at this point. I think her willingness to completely abandon the party and be on this ridiculous January 6th committee, she's out. And so I do put them in different boxes, but no, not obviously neither of them are really the future of the GOP.
Well, thank God for that. Dave Marcus, thank you so much, my man.
Thanks, Jesse.
You shopping for insurance? Don't worry, we're going to get to the Marine Corps and all the woke garbage here in a second. It is a sad day for my beloved Marine Corps. But let me ask you, you shopping around for insurance? Have you called One Share Health yet? Because here's what happens when people shop for insurance. They think about the gigantic insurance companies, and they'll just make, you know, two or three phone calls. Maybe put in some internet searches. But do you realize there is a faith-based group out there with outstanding coverage and virtually unlimited coverage options for you that is extremely affordable? And I mean, we're talking the works here. Vision, dental, you name it. One Share Health is here for you. You just have to make a phone call or go online. Go to myonesharehealth.com/Kelly. That's my.onesharehealth.com/Kelly. You get a free quote in seconds. It doesn't take hours. In seconds, you get a free quote. Don't forget to use the promo code Kelly, by the way. Get you $75 off. Faith-based group, not one of these other jerk insurance companies, a faith-based group with options, affordable options for you and your family. Go now. We'll be back. I want you to picture this. I want you to just walk with me. Just hang with me for a second, all right? I want you to picture this moment. I want you to picture waking up in the morning, and let's say you got some kiddos at home. Maybe you do, maybe you don't, but let's say you got some kiddos at home, and spouse is there. You get the kiddos up, and you get them ready for school in the morning. And you know what that's like. I do that with my little buddies every single morning. They're talking and joking and doing stupid stuff, and you're making them breakfast, and you're laughing, and you're talking about what their day's coming up, and talking about studying and problems they may be having at school. And then it comes time to walk them to the bus. They're going to go get on the school bus. They're going to go to school like kids do all across the country every day. And I want you to picture you and your spouse, get the kiddos ready. They got the little backpacks on. And they're walking down to the school bus to go meet another big group of kids. And you get there, and the other parents are there, and the groups of kids are there, and you're all standing around at the bus waiting for the school, well, at the bus stop waiting for the school bus to get there. And you're all talking, enjoying yourselves. And then you hear planes in the sky. And you look up, and you see planes are coming, and you're not sure what they are at first, but eventually you figure out those are not American planes. And then you see, because keep in mind, when you're on the ground, you can actually see this very clearly, you see bombs drop from these planes, and they're heading right towards you and your spouse and your kids. And you realize in that moment, everybody you love's about to die. If that sounds a little harsh, a little dark, that's what it's like when you lose a major war. That's what happens. I'm going to keep telling you these stories. These are real stories I'm telling you, by the way. I just changed the names and locations. These are real stories from history. Most of these are from World War II, of what people have gone through when their militaries were not strong enough to withstand a foreign military from coming inside. That's what it looks like. It looks like bombs dropping on you and your family. And I want you to picture, while those bombs are dropping in that moment, are you going to think, man, I wish we had more women in the military? Oh, gosh, look at those bombs coming. I hope we have enough gay people to withstand this. I hope we rooted out the white supremacy. Do you think black people feel welcome enough, honey? Do you think that's what you're going to be saying? Because I want you to understand, when I rant and rave about all the woke garbage in the military, I'm ranting and raving about it because it will be the direct cause for us losing a major war and American cities being reduced to ash. Here's Marine Corps General David Berger talking about what he's going to focus on in the United States Marines.
Don't you need to break that narrative that women aren't up to the job?
We do, and it's happening right now. But it will take some time before, at the senior levels, you see the numbers of women in senior leadership positions.
I'm looking right now at the website where the leadership of the Marine Corps appears, your bio and photo,
right,
and your leadership team. And they're all white men of a certain age, older. How do you want that perception, both externally and internally, of what a Marine is to change?
The goal, I think, as Secretary Austin points out, the goal is to reflect America, to reflect the society we come from. And we do on the front end. That's how it looks when we come into officer candidate school, when we come into boot camp. But over the course of 30, 35 years, it ends up not looking like what it came in to be. So we have to change that.
I'm sorry? I would have almost sworn I just heard, maybe there was something wrong with my earpiece. I would have swore I just heard the Marine Corps general say the goal is to reflect America? What? The goal is to defend America! What? Reflect? I don't care if the Marine Corps is all white. I don't care if it's all black. I don't care if it's all men. Nor should you. And if you say you care, you're a liar, is what you are. Because if those bombs were dropping, you wouldn't care. You're a peacetime liar, if that's what you say. I think we need more women. You're a liar, and you don't know what you're talking about. If your son needed emergency surgery, would you want to make sure the surgical staff is very diverse? Can we get more gays? Or would you want to make sure they're the best of the best? This stuff is how nations lose wars. If China is doing what they're currently doing, and that's training 8-9 hours every day to make sure they can kill us, and we're training 2 hours to do that, and another 6 to make sure we're women-friendly enough, we are going to die. I have told you before, I'm telling you again, your military is not good. You think you have a good military. You have painted rust. You have fancy equipment. You have excellent frontline troops. Our leadership in the military is a disease. It is a virus that is killing it. And if we do not have a military that can defend the borders of the United States of America, we are going to die. The world doesn't change. I know it's so easy to get trapped in our own little time and place, right? And we're Americans. And so we've always been so safe here. Couple big oceans, land of the free, most powerful military in the world. I don't care how old you are. If you're listening to the sound of my voice, that's the only reality you've ever known. Best military in the world. America's untouchable. History doesn't lie. History says if we get weak enough, a more powerful place will come take things from us, and it's going to hurt in ways like you can't possibly imagine. Like you can't possibly imagine. I picture that bomb scenario between me and my little buddies, and I'll be frank, it terrifies me because it's real. And I don't care what your timeline is, eventually it's coming. Bombs will drop on American soil. Are we going to be ready? We're not. Not without major, major changes. And allow me to bring this up before I wrap this up, because we have to get insanity on college campus. We're going to get that in a second. But let me bring this up for you. I know a lot of people are getting involved right now in Republican primaries and this and that. If you're not asking your potential Republican congressman, senator, president, if they want massive, and I mean massive, wholesale changes to the United States military, if you're not demanding that of the people you're sending to public office, we're already toast. Already toast. If we have a Republican Party saying the same old lame things, I love our military, look at our great generals. If that's what we're going to get out there, we're already done. I know that probably made you uncomfortable too, but it's a fact. Now, here's something else that may make you uncomfortable. The Federal Bureau of Investigation, they're worried about home title theft. You see, you have home insurance. Of course you do. You have car insurance. You have medical insurance. Why wouldn't you? You got to protect against something catastrophic happening to you. You know your biggest financial vulnerability almost undoubtedly is your home title. Your home title. It's online. These cyber thieves will steal it. They'll forge your signature on it and take a loan out against it. You'll either get evicted or you'll pay tens of thousands of dollars in lawyer fees. Or you can just go to HomeTitleLock.com right now and sign up. While you're there, use the promo code RADIO. Get yourself something special. HomeTitleLock.com, promo code RADIO. We'll be back.
Here's some things that you need to know about me. Number one, if you are a person of whiteness, I don't give a f-. I don't give a f- about your comfort. I don't give a f- about your feelings. I don't give a f- about where you think that your place is in the world.
I should be used to this by now, but I'm not. There's no safe place for BIPOC to exist when whiteness is present.
Turn off the Fox News. Do your parents listen to Fox News? Most of y'all parents are dumber than you. I'm gonna say that out loud. My parents are freaking dumb, okay? And the minute I figured that out, the world opens up. You don't have to do everything your parents say, and you don't have to believe everything your parents believe, because most likely you're smarter than them.
That's what they're teaching your kids. Joining me now, Angela Morabito. She is a campus reform fellow and former press sec under Betsy, Department of the Education Secretary, Betsy DeVos. All right, Angela, how are parents supposed to navigate this world where they feel like they should send their kids to college? They clearly understand there are some bad things being taught in college. What advice would you give to a parent these days? Because I got to be honest, I got two sons coming up approaching college age, and I don't think I want them on these campuses.
The very best thing parents can do right now is be aware. We're seeing that awareness start to have ripple effects, just like we saw a couple weeks ago in Virginia and in New Jersey. Parents don't want to hand over their children to a left-wing activist for 7 hours a day. And quite frankly, who could blame them? So the answer here is to keep showing up for your kids. Keep asking those questions at school board meetings. Keep demanding an education that's meaningful, that's not indoctrination. A decent education shouldn't be a favor that you have to ask for from your local school board. It should be a given. But unfortunately, the left has had its way with education for far too long in this country. And that's how we got to this point.
Angela, could I make the argument, and feel free to disagree with me here, that the right-wing way of thinking that there shouldn't be indoctrination is actually what killed us? Because, of course, there's going to be indoctrination. You're teaching kids. The human beings are teaching smaller human beings how to think. They're going to be indoctrinated in something. They should be indoctrinated in what we believe and not what they believe.
Well, the only kind of indoctrination I would want for the next generation is indoctrinated with how to read, write, and do math and science. Every teacher has a right to their opinion. Of course, we can't expect adults not to have opinions, but we have to expect them not to force those opinions on kids. It's the parents' job to teach about social issues in whatever way and to whatever extent that they see fit. And I think we got a note here that this really starts with the teachers' colleges. Campus reform have looked at what these schools are training future teachers to do, and that is to cram every corner of their curriculum with social justice nonsense. You've got Duke teaching critical race theory in education. You've got the University of New Mexico teaching social justice in education. I could rattle off a very long and very frightening list of what future teachers are learning. And the fact is that until we start calling it out on college campuses, it's just not going to get better.
Angela, where's that coming from? I understand what you just said, that we're indoctrinating people before they come become teachers. And then by the time they become teachers, they're nut jobs. But why? Who's funding it? Where's this coming from?
It's college administrators. That's who's in the driver's seat, and sad as it is, but that's who's deciding what gets taught. Look, this country needs great teachers. If you look at our nation's report card scores, we got less than half of fourth graders are proficient in reading. That should be a five-alarm fire. That should be cause for concern at every single teacher's college in this country. But instead, the teachers' colleges, because the colleges that oversee them, don't care if kids are learning reading, writing, arithmetic. They want them learning pronouns and woke ideology and critical race theory. That's their goal, and that's how they're training teachers. They don't really care how we're performing on a global stage. So that's where the right has got to step it up.
How are we performing on a global stage? I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, it's not hard to find some real deficiencies, to put it kindly, in the American education system, but are we falling behind other countries?
We are. You know, we should want America to be leading the world in education, but instead, in terms of industrialized countries, we're pretty middle of the pack, and the gap between us and countries like China is only getting bigger. You know, there's a real opportunity cost in education that every minute, you know, our kids spend learning about 87 genders or whatever the new leftist flavor of the week is. Those are minutes that kids in other countries are learning, you know, calculus and things that are going to benefit them later in life. Education is for everyone, and America's kids right now are getting robbed.
I want to play you this shot of the great Lieutenant Governor Winsome Sears of Virginia, and congratulations to her. Here she is.
Parents are asking to be given the vouchers so that they can decide where to send their children. We need charter schools. I'm knocking on doors, public housing. The moms and dads, they're not telling me they want more money for their child to go to that same school. They want choice. They want choice. And so let's give it to them.
Angela, is this something that can be done at a federal level, or does this have to be a state's thing? Because boy, did she nail that. I know a lot of parents because I have kids, and that's just how that works. And all they want are choices. All they want are options. This school's garbage. They want to be able to pull them out and send them to this school. Is this something Republicans can do nationally if we were to ever get the power?
So nationally, I don't believe it can be done in one fell swoop. It has to be done the way we worked for it in the Trump administration, which is state by state, county by county, district by district. And we're seeing school choice build momentum because parents have figured out what you know, really the right has known all along, which is parents need to be in control, and a government-assigned school shouldn't dictate a child's entire future. So the Trump administration was full speed ahead on this. We've watched the Biden administration completely abandon it. But the magic of school choice, you know, it goes beyond the buzzwords here. It's that schools really have to compete for students and for funding. That's the only way they'll get funded. So schools that want to indoctrinate kids are going to lose out. Those kids are going to go somewhere else. They're going to go get a real education somewhere. And schools that deliver that real education are going to win big. So it's that competition factor that we're missing without school choice, and why it's so very important.
Angela Morabito, Campus Reform, thank you so much for what you do. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Jesse.
All right. We got Light in the Mood next. You know, I'm nice. And I know you're rolling your eyes right now and you're laughing at that and you're saying, Jesse, you're not, but I think I'm a really nice person. And so I don't understand why all of my viewers, they're so mean to me. You see, I went to Washington, D.C. last week. I'm sorry, that's why I was gone for a few days. I had to go to Washington, D.C. There was a big Veterans Day event at the Lincoln Memorial where we were reading off the names of everyone who died in Iraq and Afghanistan. It was actually a really wonderful event, but that's why I was gone for a couple days last week. And because I was in D.C., I had to take a couple pictures of the sites because they had the flag set up. It was just really, really cool. I would highly recommend visiting during Veterans Day. It's really cool. And while I'm back there taking pictures, one of my viewers decided to Photoshop me next to the Washington Monument. You know, that's not nice. I realize I am of an above average height, but that is just not nice right there. 6'8", by the way, so not quite that tall. I'll see you tomorrow.